Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, and today we have Al Rubling, an architect and professor at my alma mater, the University of Maryland College Park. He teaches the business curriculum at the School of Architecture there. Al, welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Just so that people will have an understanding of why I asked you to be a part of this program, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to public speaking success?
Sure. To start off, I've really never had any formal training in public speaking. I was never a member of a debate club. Haven't taken Dale Carnegie. I guess it all goes back to the fact that when I was in elementary school and high school, I had some minor roles in some plays. I was always active as a representative in student government and needed to speak in front of a group of 50 or 60 people. And in my church, when I was young, I used to read scripture to the congregation, so it forced me to get up in front of a great number of people and read. I have an athletic background, so I played sports in front of a lot of large crowds for many years. And I think in my academic training to be an architect, in architecture school, we are subjected to a jury crit process where we're required to get up and defend our designs to a jury of crits, and it builds a lot of character doing that. I've always admired great public speakers. A couple people come to mind as Reverend Schuller out in California. And I was really touched by a senior when I was in architecture school. A fellow who just had great presence and confidence, and I always admired that. So one of the things that I learned through all those experiences was that there was no need to be nervous. Everyone really expects you to be that way. And just have a conversation with people. Speak what's on your mind or read what you have to read. And don't rush it. Just relax and enjoy the moment. So there's a variety of experiences there that have all sort of built up to where I am today.
And you use a lot of public speaking, not only as a professor at UMCP, but also in your business as an architect, right?
That's correct. I've been very fortunate that the American Institute of Architects has me give a lot of seminars around the country on firm startup, and I'll be in front of a crowd of anywhere from as small as 20 up to 500. I'm doing one in Miami in another month and a half, and there's expected to be 400 people there. I also lecture on two books that I've written on firm startup and same kind of crowds. And so not only do I do it in my class where I average 14 to 24 students, but through the book writing and seminars that I give, and also in my practice. I'm usually presenting designs and what have you, master plans to either a small committee of two or three, or a town hall meeting for a particular parish or private school where there could be up to maybe 100 people in the room. So it varies, but I've certainly had quite a different degree of exposures to a great variety of numbers of people, and one really needs to adjust how one addresses that group based on its size.
Given your experience, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something we are born being able to do?
Well, I truly believe it's something you're born with. I think it's in your DNA. I feel I was born with it being part Irish, as they say. As I said, I've had no formal training. I sort of fell out of the nest and had to flap my wings and learn how to fly. Not having that formal training, I feel like I've learned a great deal in watching people like Jay Leno and Robin Williams, because I feel that they're the same way. When you watch them backstage before they perform, you really get to see how nervous they are. You can see the energy in their hands and how they release the energy and looking at their face. And once that curtain opens up or once the program begins, you really have to change and morph in front of that audience. For me, I feel the same way I believe they do, because I've heard them address this point, in that you don't want to let the audience down. You have to perform, and you have a message to deliver or a routine that they have or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so not having that formal training, I think it's something that's in you. It's in your soul. You get better at it the more you do it.
Do you think people can learn it, though?
Oh, I think people could be coached, sure. I think that I've certainly had employees in my firm go through Dale Carnegie training, and they're videotaped, and they look at themselves and learn from how they present themselves. And some will learn, I guess one of the worst things someone can have these days is a lot of millennials use the word like. It's, you know, how many times can you get like into a sentence or into a paragraph? And I think one can be coached to get that word to be used only once maybe in a paragraph. So I think that it can be taught and learned from, but I think your better speakers, the ones that are very passionate, what have you, it comes from their soul, and God's given them a gift, I guess.
Yeah. It was interesting that you mentioned like, because that is one of the, like, it's a verbal tick that's very common in certain pockets of the United States.
Oh, absolutely. I have a son that's ADHD, and because of the way electrons fire in his brain, the words come out slower than the way the brain processes things. So the word like is a spacer for him.
Ah.
And once we learned that from the neurolinguist, we understood that was a coping mechanism for him to be able to communicate. So they've coached him in the past to try to deal with that, and they were successful. So
yeah, that's part of linguistics, is that you can learn to speak in certain ways if you so choose.
Correct.
Imagine, if you will, that you are a public speaking superhero, cape and all. What do you believe would be your main superpower?
It's a great question. I would say that my superpower would be that I can speak in tongues.
Okay.
I think that a speaker needs to hold the interest of all that are listening. A goal of not having any fall asleep or getting up to leave the room to go to the restroom. I really think that you can maintain an audience's attention through humor. I think that's okay. I think it's something to project to people that we're going to have fun here, and there's something to learn together. I can learn from you. You can learn something from me. And we're here to make our lives better, whatever the topic is. And I use that term speaking in tongues because there's always a wide variety of people out there. Like when I teach at the University of Maryland, I have several cultures in the room. I'll have Muslims, and I have folks from Europe. I have folks from Asia. And I can't speak in slang because they don't get the slang. So you have to learn to be able to speak in such a way that everyone gets it. So you need to have an understanding of who your audience is.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned slang, because that brought up to me when I was first looking at going to University of Maryland College Park, I got the, you know, the little welcome packet and everything, and there was a sentence in there that said, you know, you can hang out and cut up with friends. And I had no clue what cut up is. I'm like, what, we make paper dolls?
Yeah.
It was a slang term. I had no clue what it meant. I mean, eventually I found someone who told me it meant like laughing or something like that. But it was interesting.
It is interesting because I don't know. To me, that meant that you were going to diss somebody. You were going to go and make fun of them if you were going to cut them up, you know?
So yeah, but it was obviously
totally
the context was it was something you wanted to do with your friends.
Absolutely.
And I was just like, oh. Hey, whoever wrote this was very entrenched in whatever culture they were in. And so
right. That
was a common slang term. And they didn't think that, you know, this is going out to people in other areas of the United States who might not use that same slang.
Correct. That's something that I think comes over time. I think the more experience you have to realize it's not about you. It's about the audience.
It's totally about the audience.
And that there are different ages. When I have a seminar on firm startup, I will have millennials, I'll have boomers, and I have the greatest generation ever known in the room. And they all think and communicate differently.
Yeah.
And I have to be, when the lights are on and I see that, I'm able to try to address it. And I try not to go out, I don't go out of my way, but I try to be sensitive to that, if you will.
Right.
I don't call everybody dude, if you will.
That's probably a good idea. Dude.
Dude. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, because I think dude means a different thing in different generations.
I would think it does, yes. Yes, I don't. That's not a name I sort of try to get people to call me, but that's just me. So anyway.
Okay. So if you were to give someone advice on perhaps developing this particular superpower, what tips would you give them?
You know, many people, when I've been around people, and I've been up in front of several thousand people, and I spoke to folks that give a lot of speeches to large groups, and you've probably heard many say in the past that make believe the audience is naked, you know, and that you're up there in confidence and what have you. And I guess they say that because they want to make the speaker feel that they, the audience, are uncomfortable. You know, they're out there and that you're the only clothed normal one in the room. And I've always found that to be an interesting statement. The problem I have with that is I'd want to be naked with them because I want to feel like I'm one of them and fitting in with them. You know, it's not like I'm so different. And,
right.
You know, I think that if you're clothed, you stand out more in that sort of metaphor. So I haven't really subscribed to that.
Yeah, I've always got that phrase because I would feel very uncomfortable in front of a nude audience.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, like I said, I'd want to be the same way, you know, and I've just never really understood that.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would definitely be uncomfortable.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think that the superpower comes from your soul. And, you know, there's a reason why everybody's not a superhero and in the comics or have cartoons made of them. You know, I think that there are a few superheroes, and my advice is you have to be genuine, you have to be passionate, you have to be confident about your message or your purpose. In theory, I guess the audience is there for a reason. It may be to see and hear you, but you really need to respect your role and just don't say too much. I truly feel it's never about me. And I would say that to someone. When you're a superhero, you have to be humble. I mean, this is not one of those things that it's all about you. It's about them. It's about the audience. So the advice I give to people is don't pontificate. Keep your message to three things. And the goal is always to have the audience take away one thing. You know, I truly believe in that. I think that if you speak from your soul about your topic, you wear it on your sleeve, that people get that. And that makes it a bit different than being this PhD guy that's up there talking about his theory about something that's so abstract that people have a hard time following or what have you. And
Right. If
you put it in plain English, you know, that if you speak with the gift of tongues, okay, if you can do that, if you can get your message down to the basics and not appear to be aloof or be above everybody, to come off as being you're one of them, I think that that is a gift because not many do that.
Mm-hmm.
But those that do, I think, are just tremendously successful because whether it's 20 or 2,000, everyone should leave that room with something and hopefully not thinking you're a jerk or your message is an idiot and that it was worth their while. I think that's something I've learned from Leno and Williams is that I've heard them say that people pay a lot of money to see them. And they want people to get their money's worth. They don't want to let anybody down. And that's the way I feel in my life. I'm here to make things happen. I'm here to help people. That's what motivates me. And so I want to please everyone. Now, I can't please everyone all the time. And I can't make everyone in the audience get one thing out of what I have to say. But the fact is, if that is a conscience, if that is your motivator, I think that you come off more humble, you come off in a more basic, fundamental way to people, that you're approachable. And I think you want to be approachable. You don't want to be this deity up on the platform that people can't approach. You know, I would hate to be, you know, the president of a country or a king or something that people can't approach you. I want to touch and help people, whatever that means, you know, for them. And I think that comes out of the way you do speak, you know, from the soul.
You know, something struck me when you first started answering this question, and as you continue to speak, is it sounds like almost the message in between the words you spoke or underlying is that you should find your own superpower and not try to be someone else.
Amen. We're all unique.
Yeah.
And that's what makes life wonderful. Because if we all wore the same clothes and behaved the same way, imagine and drove the same cars, imagine how boring we'd be.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so if you're unique, celebrate your uniqueness by making people aware that you're unique, and maybe they can learn something from it, because I certainly don't want to be my partners in business, or I don't want to be the dean in the school where I am, but if I can contribute and be part of the team in succeeding in life, that's my role. And as long as people don't take on the idea that they're too important, they're above anybody, I think that's where people get in trouble.
Right.
I mean, you see that in entertainment all the time.
Yeah.
Just, you know. So as long as you stay grounded and you have a spouse or you have a significant other or you have a family that keeps you grounded, you can be inspirational, but also remember who you are.
Right. Good. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Al, for joining us on Public Speak Superpowers today.
It's been my pleasure. I've never been referred to as a superhero, so I will take that in a humble way.
Okay. All right. So this is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.